Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Well, here we go again. Another incredible week. But you know, I'm going to do something different this morning. Well, actually, it's kind of what I do all the time, but I'm going to really do it this time. So there's been all sorts of news swirling out there. I mean, there's Hannity and Kimmel bashing each other, which is, I think Hannity's getting by far the best of Kimmel. And there's the ongoing Stormy whatever Daniels, blah, blah, blah. And there's Trump going off on his tariff tirades and surprising his own staff, upping the threatened tariffs against China by $100 billion. And there's, all sorts of new texts by Peter Strzok and Linda Page, and it's linking him to the White House. And yeah, I've covered lots of this stuff before. Lots of this stuff you can get on, well, some media. I mean, some of the media is just pathetic, and you're not going to get any of it. But there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes this week. And I want to bring those matters to your attention because they're really enormous in their significance and in their future potentials. And nobody, but nobody, is talking about them. So, and there's a lot. There's a lot. And of course, I'm going to start you off with a story. But before we get to the story for this morning, let me just tell you a little bit, give you a little overview on what we're going to be covering. Number one, some very, very disturbing news relative to the left's maniacal drive for gun control and Second Amendment rights. You're not going to like it. I'm going to give you some things that you can do about it. Next, some other, should we say, expenditures of our government. I want you to feel good about where your tax dollars go, folks. I want you to know that they're just spent so wisely, with you first and foremost in the government's mind. Your health, your safety, your welfare, and your financial foundation. And, of course, that of your family, too. They love you. Just wait to see. just wait for this short list of a few mind-boggling expenditures by your government. And then I'm going to bring to your attention what's going on with some changes in banking law, which are percolating. Some have already been enacted. Some are coming. Quite important. And potentially quite beneficial in some respects for you relative to your community, local, and regional banks, finally, because they have been hammered quite intentionally over the last 10 years. By the government and by the big banks working in concert with the government. And we're then going to talk, I got some mind-blowing information for you. So, you know, we have this attorney general out there, Xavier, baby, in California. He's a rabid dog, a disciple of our friend Holder, another rabid dog, who, of course, is the, in his words, wingman for Barack Obama, yet another rabid dog. And this guy stands in front of the TV cameras and proclaims this, that, and the other. I'm going to term it the humanitarian hoax. But wait till you get the background. You know, Barack Obama had a background. Everybody ignored it. About the only people, in fact, that were bringing it to your attention were me, Sean Hannity, and just a few others, Mark Levin. And so the American people were, if they were listening, warned about the backgrounds of these and the other cabal that accompanied them, because backgrounds tell you lots, folks. I mean, you know, if you happen to be an employer, those of you who are listening to me who are small business people, I think you ask for a resume, don't you? You want to know where your potential new employee, where they've been, where they come from, what they've done. Maybe some of you even do background checks. Criminal checks, affiliation checks, whatever. I mean, this is kind of basic everyday common sense with about anybody you deal with for anything important. And you know, the positions of Attorney General of California, Congress, the Senate, the President of the United States, the people he's going to select or does select for Attorney General and other matters, their backgrounds matter. They matter. And their affiliations matter. And we all know about Barack Obama with Ayers and his bae Bernadine, the unrepentant terrorists, and Jeremiah Wright, GD America, Black Liberation, and dreams from my father. You know, his father, the Marxist Islamist. His stepdad, the Islamist in Indonesia. I mean, all these things matter. So I'm going to tell you some things tonight about this guy in California and what he's really after and what his background really is. And although I think you have sensed it up to now, this is going to curl your hair, and it ties right in with what I've reported to you in other shows, some of them years ago, about La Raza, about La Raza, top people being in the Obama White House, etc. So I think you'll find that, I think you'll find it fascinating, actually. Also, we're going to go a little bit into Obama, because what is beginning to, I think, manifest itself now is something that I have been saying for a long, long time. And that is, everything he did was intentional. But, to go the next step, many of the things he did, he intentionally set up to fail. We're going to review a few of those things because we are dealing with them now. Our kids will be dealing with some of them later. Our government, our president, the people who support our president and the government are all dealing with them now. These are all poison pills. By the way, formulated to be poison. Not formulated to be happy. By Obama and crew, with one end goal, which, by the way, happens to tie in, as you'll see, to what I'm going to tell you about the Attorney General of California. It's all linked, folks. It's all linked. Wait till you hear it. And then I'm going to tell you some more. I'm going to tell you some more about what's happening with censorship and the dangers of big tech. Google, Microsoft, now getting into the fray. Twitter, YouTube, you name it. By the way, there's been an excellent series that Tucker Carlson's been putting on. Hopefully you've been able to see a few of those segments. If not, you should. He's done a good job. I'm going to try not to cover the stuff he has. This is a whole different kind of set of facts and background data for you. No pun intended. But good series, because, you know, once again, I was one of the first. If you remember, I've been promising to do this series on big tech, their intrusion into your life, their attempted control of information and words, their subordination of conservative viewpoints and information to liberal viewpoints and information through algorithms and rankings. And in some cases, just simply taking down conservative sites. But there's more going on. And what's happening with Facebook right now, and I'm sure you've at least gotten glimpses of it, if you've turned on the radio or watched a little bit of TV, almost, not all, but almost on any station, you will know that Facebook, shall we say, the layers of the nasty onion of technological intrusion, capturing of data, selling of the data, mining of the data by Facebook is being unpeeled kind of almost every day now. And every time one layer of the onion is peeled, there's an even more rotten layer below it. All right. Let's get started. First of all, we have our story. And this is the story of eight men, young men, very young men, one 18, one another 18, one 20, one 21, one 20, 121, 123-year-old, and 124-year-old, an old man. And, you know, we always talk about how the younger generation just doesn't get it, or many in the younger generation don't get it, and how they, they're, shall we say, not kind of focused on or overly enthusiastic in many cases about work. They kind of like their pastimes. Their biggest thing in life, not all, but many, is their phone or their video games or whatever it happens to be. So I want to tell you about these eight guys, all 18 to 24 years old. Number one, let me tell you what they have in common. They all owned weapons, every single one of them, and were proficient in their use. Every single one of them had a job. In fact, more than half of them were entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs at that age. Every single one of them lived on their own. They didn't live with mommy and daddy. In fact, most of them, their parents had already died. Every single one of them knew what gender they were. They weren't confused. They didn't think that they were a woman in a man's body. They did not go to the local medical facilities for, you know, any parts changes. They knew that they were males. They knew that they were men. And they were happy with it. In fact, they were unabashedly happy about it. And not a single one of them, not a single one of them, in their ranch house, their farmhouse, their house in town, they didn't have not a single one of them had a room that they had labeled as a safe place. And what other people said didn't bother them. Oh, yeah, they'd lose their temper once in a while, and a couple of them would even get in fist fights, and one of them, believe it or not, got in a duel. But you know, cowering in the corner and shriveling under the table and collapsing into a fetal position of human jello because somebody used an offensive word didn't faze them in the least. Let me tell you a bit more about these eight men. One of them was the Marquis de Lafayette, who eventually commanded the French forces, which were instrumental in America winning its Revolutionary War against Britain. Another was James Monroe, later became president of the United States, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment of which, of course, is your right to keep and bear arms, and the first is your right to free speech. Henry Lee III, another signer and founder. Nathan Hale, a patriot, eventually hung by the British as a spy. Aaron Burr, not necessarily recognized as a nice guy, but nonetheless a fierce patriot. Alexander Hamilton, first Secretary of the Treasury, signer of all the founding documents. George Washington, by the way, Marquis de Lafayette was 18 years old. James Monroe was 18 years old in the year 1776. Henry Lee III was 20. Nathan Hale was 21. Aaron Burr was 20. And Alexander Hamilton was 21 years old. George Washington at the lofty old age of 24. And Thomas Jefferson at the ripe old age of 23. Rather amazing, isn't it? I wonder what those men, aged 18 to 24, back there in 1776, if they could somehow magically be transported to this day and age and sit in on a college classroom as a left-wing professor spews hate and anti-American ideology. As students at Hofstra marched to take down a statue, in fact, of one of them, Jefferson. As whiny crybabies of the left run from words generated by our rights under the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights they signed, one can only wonder what they might think. And that's my story for tonight. And you know, I chose it because, as you'll see, a significant portion of this show is going to revolve around the Constitution. And in some cases, people who are working hard because of their backgrounds to burn that document, to tear it up, to transform it, to get rid of it, to dispose of it. And with it, this country, its values, and your freedoms. All right. Now, let's talk about a couple of the other million things I got to go over with you this morning. Number one, got a website for you to check out. VoteTheWill.com. VoteTheWill.com. This is an organization which just sprung up about a year ago, and they are doing a bang-up job. Some of you may be called by them. I get a call every month. I'm asked to give my opinion on their topic of the month, all of which are germane, and all of which, I might add, are couched as a straightforward question. No left, no right. Well, they're up to almost 400,000 people participating per month now. And their goal is to get to 1 million. And each month, when the... I got emails coming in already. And each month, when all their votes on whatever the topic has to be, happens to be that month, when all those votes are tabulated, off they go to Congress. So it is a really interesting concept, and it's a way to get your voice heard, one of many, e pluribus unum, from one many, from many one. But it's a way to get your voice heard, and you ought to check out that website and see if you can get on their call list. The calls take 60 seconds, 90 seconds per month. No fuss, no muss. But they are beginning to have an impact. You know, when a congressman gets a survey of 400,000 voters, and they only call voters, by the way, of 400,000 voters that says 80% of these people think X, that has an impact. And the more people on that list, the better. All right, that's the first quick thing I want to cover with you this morning. Second, very important. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I'm going to do some more research on it. Listen, I have long warned that China is public enemy number one when it comes to the United States. Oh, yes. Radical Islam, you know, that's really an enemy of civilization, an enemy of Western civilization, and certainly an enemy of the United States, and has to be dealt with. And it's pervasive. Radical Islam, by the way, is also a problem in communist China. Radical Islam is a problem everywhere. It's an insidious ideology promulgated by rabid folks who have nothing to lose because if you die, you're a martyr. Very, very difficult enemy. And listen, Russia is dangerous because Russia is out for Russia. But you know, in the end, Russia is a pretty tiny country of 120 million people. A huge portion, we're talking 70% plus, of their economy is energy. I mean, the economy is anything but diversified. I believe, I'll have to check the stats, so I'm going off the top of my head in memory, but over 83% of their exports are energy related. Only 17% of their entire export business is something other than gas, oil, whatever. And yeah, they got a lot of nukes. And Putin just came out with his new nuclear-powered cruise missile, which he says the United States can't defeat. The United States is saying nothing, and I guess you could take that many ways. But while Russia is dangerous, we all know what Russia is. And no, they're not colluders with Trump. They are many other things, but not that. But China. China, folks. China is the force to be reckoned with. And I have often said, and I will repeat here again, and I'm going to give you some information which just came out this week, which I think supports it, that in the end, it will be America and China squaring off. Not America and radical Islam, not America and Russia, but America and China. And that's because there is economic rivalry. And China's economy, gee, thanks to America, thanks Bill Clinton and Nixon and all you guys, nice job. And China's economy is second only to ours. Some say it will overtake ours in the next 5, 6, 7 years in terms of GDP. Their military is second only to ours. And they are throwing increasing amounts of money, like really big increasing amounts of money, at their military. And working hard on developing anti-American weapons. I mean, specific weapons for use against the American military, like special missiles to kill carriers. There's only one country in the world, folks, who has a carrier-based navy. That's us. They're also building up their nuclear weaponry and arsenal. And they have a huge, huge standing army. I believe right now, including their reserves, 50 to 1 of ours. Remember, there's 1.2 billion and growing people in China. There's 320 to 330, depending upon how many illegal aliens we have from day to day in the United States. Here's a very concerning thing that happened this week. So, Putin and President Xi over there in China got together, as did their foreign and military ministers. And an announcement came out from that summit that China and Russia are now forming a military alliance. And this is not just a military alliance for self-protection, because, look, let's face it, China doesn't have to worry about an attack from the French. I mean, you know, the French can't even keep their city safe. And China certainly doesn't have to worry about an attack from Vietnam. No, this military alliance is designed as an alliance against the United States, and to a lesser extent, its Western allies, most of which can't be counted on in the pinch anyway, right? Ms. Merkel over there in Germany. China's Defense Minister Wei Feng, W-E-I-F-E-N-G, attended this conference, which, by the way, was called the Moscow International Security Conference. You can look it up. And he delivered two messages from the conference. The first was, quote, "I am visiting Russia as a new defense minister of China to show the world a high level of development of our bilateral relations and firm determination of our armed forces to strengthen strategic cooperation. Second, to support the Russian side in organizing the Moscow International Security Conference, the Chinese side has come to show Americans the close ties between the armed forces of China and Russia, especially in this situation." He doesn't specify what situation that is. I think it's the American military buildup right now under Trump. "We've come to support you." He's talking to the Russians. "The Chinese side is ready to express with the Russian side our common concerns and common position on important international problems at international venues as well." By the way, that same day as those announcements by the Chinese defense minister, that same day, Russia delivered the first pair of S-400 Triumph air defense systems. These are the state-of-the-art air defense systems. It's the same systems they gave Iran to protect itself against either an American or Israeli, or more and more likely a Saudi, first strike against Iranian nuclear facilities. I mean, this is state-of-the-art stuff. Between you and me, I'm quite sure China has already stolen all the plans from Russian computers, just like they've stolen approximately $3 trillion worth of intellectual military property from us, including our new F-35 fighter. But we'll leave that tale for another day. Anyway, more S-400s are expected to be delivered in the future by Russia, who, by the way, is starved for foreign currency because of their limited economy. And it's a $3 billion purchase package that China has now inked with Russia on this one military item. This is something that bears watching, folks, because the only thing more dangerous than China is, no matter how tenuous, no matter how strained under the surface, is a Russian-Chinese alliance against the United States. Think of the implications it could have in the South China Sea, the Ukraine, the Mideast, and Asia, and North Korea. I mean, even Africa, where China, as I've reported to you over the last 3 or 4 months, has been rapidly expanding its ownership, acquisition, and control of raw materials. Basic stuff you need for a burgeoning economy and a burgeoning military. All right. I'm going to keep my eye on that. Nobody else is reporting it, but I think it might be the critical news story of the week. And it's huge. Okay. Let's talk about some matters related to the Second Amendment. Very disturbing this week. First of all, a Massachusetts court, by the way, these are all these articles, that Chinese article is posted under International, I believe the producers put it there. And then these Second Amendment, all the Second Amendment gun control stuff is obviously posted under the gun control section of articles on the website, on therightsideradio.com. I hope many of you at least skim the headlines of all the articles that my producers do such a great job of posting every week. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to ferret out the information, select what is true or can be verified, and then put it up. I might add, I'm going to digress for just a moment. Underneath, for those of you downloading the podcast or listening on the web, underneath the audio bar where you click to listen to the show or download to your phone is a video. And it's about an American soldier. He happens to be black, doesn't really matter, but an American soldier who is a great guy and a great family man who got railroaded in Obama's military for killing an Afghan. To make a long story short, this was during an investigation. The Afghan tried to attack him, tried to get the gun away from him, and he had to kill him. The Afghan interpreter, you know, Obama didn't want to upset the natives, so to speak, and he's all about politics, not about military. I think we all know that. The Afghan translator that was present at first corroborated the soldier's story, which of course would have totally exonerated him, and then suddenly changed the tune that this soldier killed this Afghan, this Taliban murderer, in cold blood. Executed him. We come to find out that this Afghan interpreter who changed his tune was suddenly flown to the United States, granted asylum, and all sorts of other goodies, including an income and a house and all sorts of stuff. You know, there are no coincidences. In any event, this video is worth watching. It's a tearjerker. It will offend your sense of right and wrong, and they are trying to raise money to get this guy out of his life sentence in the brig. This patriot who served, who volunteered and served to protect you and I, and was railroaded by Obama. The same Obama who protected Major Hassan, you know, workplace violence. Okay. Let's get back to the Second Amendment. So I told you about, a month or two ago, that all this crapola by David Hoag, whiny David Hoag, and the rest of the really maniacal anti-gun crew on the left, financed by Bloomberg, by Soros, and by a host of other left-wing organizations, the money that the NRA gives is really one of the smallest amounts in aggregate or to any candidate of any of the national organizations. And I got an email, I think it was 2 weeks ago, saying, do you have any figures on that? So to Barbara in Michigan, yeah, I do have some figures on that. Planned Parenthood versus the NRA. Planned Parenthood in the last election donated $7.8 million to candidates, and the NRA donated $3.2 million to candidates. The NRA gets no government subsidy, by the way, and the Planned Parenthood gets $500 million a year from the United States government. Depending upon your views on things, I'm giving you mine. The number of children that were murdered last year by Planned Parenthood was 321,000. The number of children murdered by the NRA was zero. The percent of the budget, the annual operating budget of Planned Parenthood, that is funded by taxpayers, that's you and me. I mean, doesn't it make you want to retch? There's a use of your tax money for you. Ties right into the next mini segment here. Is 40%. 40% of Planned Parenthood's annual budget is paid for by you and me, by the United States government. The percentage that is paid of the NRA annual operating budget is zero. A big goose egg. Over the last week, there's been several disturbing events when it comes to your gun rights. And you need to be watching this like a hawk. And you need to be on top, I'm telling you, you need to be on top of your local government, your state government, your congressman, and your senator about a whole bunch of things, but particularly right now about your Second Amendment rights. There was a lawsuit filed against a law passed in Oregon that is backed by the NRA, the claimant, the plaintiff, is backed by the NRA. And that law up there was actually pretty mild compared to some of the other things I'm going to tell you about here in a moment. But it was about high-capacity magazines and certain very specific types of guns. A Massachusetts court this week ruled that assault weapons, of course, the left loves using generic terms because the more generic it is, the more you can twist and manipulate it in the future to suit your particular needs, wants, or ideological grabs at the time. A Massachusetts court ruled that assault rifles are not covered by the Second Amendment. Obviously, there's going to be a number of challenges to this, but that ruling is concerning, folks. Very concerning. And you may have heard, any of you who get any kind of newsletters from the Second Amendment Foundation, the NRA, or wherever, you may have heard that two suburbs of Chicago, because, you know, the gun control laws work so well in Chicago. I think 3,000 people dying of gunshot wounds last year and another 6,000 wounded. Two suburbs of Deerfield, of Chicago, including Deerfield, in the last week have passed ordinances which basically ignore the Second Amendment. You know, the Second Amendment that those eight young kids, as they would be viewed today, children, I think the left would call them, the Second Amendment that those eight young men that I told you about in my story in the beginning of this show was a part of the Bill of Rights, which they signed. And by the way, which brought, I didn't mention this in the story, which brought an immediate declaration of treason and shoot on sight or capture to be hanged decree from King George. Remember their pledge to one another when they inked those documents, which are the basis of our freedoms in this country? We pledge our lives, our property, and our sacred honor to one another. They knew. Anyway, the residents of these two, not the residents, but the city councils of these two progressive Chicago suburbs, I guess they're not very impressed by all that, because they have outlawed assault rifles, once again, quite generic. And they've outlawed magazines, I believe it's above 7 rounds. I can check on that, but whatever it is, a low number of bullets for a magazine. Not only that, they've gone one step further. They have said that if you don't turn your weapons in, this is weapon confiscation, folks. This is not merely quote-unquote safety or quote-unquote gun control or quote-unquote limitation on purchases. This is gun confiscation. The first of its type, really, attempted in the United States. And if you have an assault weapon, which, by the way, their definition is so broad as to, it could probably include a pistol with a 9-round clip. You know, if you happen to have a 9mm, a Glock or a SIG or whatever, in the view of these city councils, you have an assault weapon. And if you don't turn it in, and you're caught with it, within the next 60 days, not only do you face all sorts of criminal liabilities, but they will try and slap you with a $1,000 a day fine. For every day, not from the day you're caught, but for every day after 60 days from their passage of the ordinance this week. Now, the left is jumping up and down for joy. This is wonderful, and this is the beginning, da-da-da-da-da. You know, all the nonsense that you would expect. And in watching some of the other channels, like MSNBC or CNN, which I try to do as little as possible because it's just not bad for, it's just bad for your health. But they have these talking heads on there talking about, oh, and this is totally legal because the last case that was just like this was went all the way to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court refused to hear it, which means this is legal. Well, not quite. As is so often true, like 99.9% of the time, the left lies. I think we've kind of figured that out. And in fact, the other two cases which bear any resemblance to this one, which have worked their ways up to a federal appeals court and been upheld and then not granted cert, that is, the Supreme Court has refused to hear it, making it the law, making the ruling of the underlying circuit court, appeals court, the law, are not like this case at all. They did not involve fines. They did not involve criminal penalties. They did not involve confiscation or mandatory relinquishment. So this is going to be a really interesting court battle. And I would be shocked if, no matter which appeals court gets it, and it'll probably be, I believe, the fourth, which is pretty liberal, no matter which appeals court gets it, and no matter what they're ruling, I would be shocked if the Supreme Court does not, in the end, hear this case and throw it out, by the way. But remember, we're only one justice away from it not being thrown out on the Supreme Court. We need another conservative, firmly conservative justice, ASAP. In fact, another two would be even better. All right. There's been some other distressing developments on the gun front this past week, too. I covered for you in the last several weeks my views of and some facts concerning David Hogue, who is the really nasty, really angry non-survivor of Parkland. One of the things we learned this week was that he wasn't even at school the day of the shooting. He wasn't even at the school. But the left, of course, is touting him as a child survivor who's out to save the children. Remember, we're talking about children, folks, who are, in some cases, the same age as some of the eight men that I talked about in my story. Marcus de Lafayette, 18. James Monroe, 18. Children. He's out to save the children. My, how far children have regressed. But anyway, corporate America, who you would think would have some conservative values, you know, free market economy, right to free speech, which happens to include advertising, capitalism, all that kind of stuff. And capitalism, of course, cannot exist without freedoms. The freedom of your customers to pick and choose and buy what they want. The freedom of your customers to earn a living, not pay it all to the government, and have money to purchase your product. And I can go down the list. But corporate America has changed. And many of the chieftains of corporate America are now people in their late 30s, 40s, in some cases early 50s, who were the beginnings of the progressive, very successful invasion and intrusion on our educational system. And what you are seeing right now is kind of a foreshadowing of the future 20 or 30 years ago when the David Hogs, think about this, when the David Hogs are in their 40s and 50s and in positions of power, not just, you know, some high school kid that the media happens to love, that the left can insert words into, who's never had a job, never been in the military, never owned a gun. I'm not sure he's ever fired a gun. Can't get into four different colleges, which is, I find, rather amazing. So my point is that corporate America, to a large extent, is not the free speech, free market, capitalism, freedom, loving corporate America that we kind of think exists and that used to exist. And I'm not denigrating all companies, but more and more corporate America, I mean, look at Google, Facebook, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, Alphabet, Twitter, YouTube. I mean, these people are not only, shall we say, not conservative. They are alt-left. And if you look at the CEOs of those companies, kind of make my point that what we're seeing from some of the firms I'm about to give you the names of, with CEOs in their 40s and 50s, that we're seeing the fruits of this very successful penetration of our education system by the progressive left. These youngsters who are the CEOs of Twitter, I believe he's in his 30s, of Facebook, 20s and 30s, of Twitter, 20s and 30s, Microsoft, that's Bill Gates, older guy, Google, 30s and 40s. This is the product of the progressive left in education 10 or 15 years later than the training years of the folks of the companies I'm about to give you. And the difference between, shall we say, corporate America of just 15 or 20 years ago to corporate America of today, and I think as a foreshadow of corporate America to come, using Facebook, Twitter, Google, Microsoft, etc., as examples, is scary. You know, and I've said this many times, Mussolini said in 1934 that fascism is the marriage of corporate and state. That might be the best one-line description of the foundation of fascism as exists. And then you can go off on other tangents, the control of speech, and all the things that you see going on the left, by the way. Fascism is a left-wing thing, folks, not a right-wing thing. Right-wing is totalitarianism, different deal. But as you see our government under Obama and under Clinton, and unfortunately under Bush in some respects, as you see our government get more and more left, more and more globalist-minded, less and less sovereign America-minded, you are seeing the same things happening in corporate America. In other words, corporate America and the government are growing ever closer. It's something that really needs to be watched. And it goes into what I think should be happening with the high-tech companies, which we're going to talk about. I'm not sure we'll get to that part of it tonight, this morning. And that is antitrust. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. So Laura Ingraham's show. I've talked about this the last several weeks. About the... David Hogue's leading of this corporate America boycott of the Laura Ingraham show. Because she dared insult him with a tweet about him not getting into four colleges. I mean, really, I wonder what the eight young men, those 18 to 24-year-olds that I told you about in my story tonight, I wonder how they would have reacted. You think they would have led a boycott? Maybe George Washington would have led a boycott against a cotton grower. I mean, who knows? Anyway, the companies so far, this is really amazing, I think. The companies so far which have dropped their advertising of Laura Ingraham, in other words, are boycotting Laura Ingraham, a terrific conservative radio talk show host and TV personality. Because of David Hogue, supported by George Soros' Media Matters, I might add, to a large degree. Write these down, because my opinion is, you really don't want to write any of these companies a check. You know, two can play this game. If they don't want to send a check to Laura, then we probably don't want to send a check to them. There's lots of alternatives out there. You know, there's no company that you have to deal with in the modern day and age. You have lots of selections. And I might add, as a sidelight, that the more local, the better. Maybe it costs a little bit more. You know, maybe you pay an extra buck or two for your widget or whatever you're buying. But, you know, that's your neighbor. That's your friend. That's your town. That's your community. That's a mind that probably thinks much like yours. Not exactly, but much like yours. Who would you rather support? Would you rather support Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos? Or would you rather support your neighbor? These are the companies so far, it's remarkable, that are now boycotting, that have pulled their advertising completely from Laura Ingraham. Office Depot, put that on your list. Liberty Mutual Insurance, which I find to be heartrending because, you know, I had vehicle insurance. In fact, for some of the ranch trailers, some of the trucks with Liberty Mutual for many, 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 many years. And they were terrific. I mean, really good service, minimum of hassle whenever I had a claim. Took care of me great when I had my wreck and wrecked my truck, if you remember, back there in February 2015. So it kind of broke my heart. But, you know, let me tell you an interesting story to kind of go along with my prelude to the segment. So when I saw their name on the list and knew I had insurance with them, and it's, you know, expensive, it isn't a couple hundred bucks a year, I started doing some research and I called the local agent here near the ranch who's done a great job on other types of insurance and had him do some research. And guess what? Guess what I found? I found another insurance company 5-star rating, incredible reviews and accolades from customers who got the same service for them, which I've enjoyed from Liberty Mutual in the past. I mean, you got to give the devil their due. With better coverages, let me underline that, with better coverages than I had from Liberty Mutual in a whole range of categories, from glass to medical to you name it, for less than one half, that is right, less than 50% of what I've been paying to Liberty Mutual. So there's a lesson in that. And it goes right back to what I told you. You know, sometimes this kind of stuff is a blessing in disguise. If you have been frequenting Office Depot, guess what? I bet you can find an office supply store or an online office supply store or whatever that can get you everything you need better. So, Liberty Mutual Insurance, put that on your list. TripAdvisor, really? TripAdvisor? These are the guys who want you to go to them to line up your trips and look for hotels and all this kind of stuff. They canceled their advertising with Laura Ingraham? Well, guess what? I have not ever used TripAdvisor, and I never will. Nestle, this is another heartbreaker for me. I always, always, always have chocolate chips in a big old jar in the ranch house kitchen. And I go through probably 2 bags of Nestle's chips a week. Maybe more, if the truth be known. And now, I'm faced with a real dilemma. No more Nestle's chips. But that's okay. Because, you know, in my trip down to the grocery store, I found out that Ghirardelli has terrific dark chocolate chips. Hershey's has great dark chocolate chips. Hershey's is actually less than Nestle's. Huh. Too bad for you, Nestle's. Johnson & Johnson. You know, the baby powder people, which is a whole other story. The baby powder people. Yeah. Guess what? Whenever presented with a choice, this gentleman is not buying any more Johnson & Johnson products. Joseph A. Bank. Now, this stunned me. So here's a company that sells suits to men. I would imagine that a portion of those men who buy suits are conservative, or at least moderate. I'll bet you a fair portion of those men who buy suits have guns. But Joseph A. Bank, the men's clothier, has withdrawn its advertising. Hulu. You know, Hulu TV, streaming TV, I don't happen to have it. I can't even tell you really what it is. Not being tech savvy, this cowboy is not. Expedia, wow, another travel deal. And a travel deal which I've used in the past. And you know what? I went online and guess what? I found a better travel supplier. Imagine that. And by the way, Travelocity is fine too. Orbis is fine too. Going direct to the airlines, although a lot of these booking outfits don't tell you, going direct to the airlines will normally save you money over any of these booking outfits. Nutrish, the manufacturer of pet food. I got their name wrong last week, excuse me. Nutrish. Well, you know what? For me, Nutrish is no longer delish. What are some more of, I mean, just of really this incredible list? Jenny Craig Weight Watchers. Wayfair, this is another one that kind of broke my heart. I've always kind of loved Wayfair products, especially their rugs. Guess what? I found 3 other suppliers that have the same rugs, and 2 of them have them for less. Ha! Amazing. Another gift in disguise. Miracle Ear. Being only 21 years old myself, I don't have to worry about Miracle Ear. But, just so you know, Miracle Ear dropped its advertising. Stitch Fix. To be honest with you, I don't even know what they do. But that is one of the companies that dropped advertising. Principal, which I believe is an insurance firm or investment firm of some type. I'm not really sure, but they dropped their advertising. Honda dropped their advertising of Laura Ingraham. Really? I mean, how many of you, us, folks like us, folks in the flyover country, in the red, red states, how many of us have Honda products? How many of us have Honda generators? Or a Honda ATV? Or maybe even a Honda car or truck? I found that one unbelievable. I mean, by all means, alienate 70% of your market. Great, great job. And then Progressive Insurance. Never used them. Got cute commercials, you know, Flo in her little white suit, but Progressive. Anyway, there's a list for you to add to Starbucks and some of the other companies I've given you over the last 4 or 5 months, which do not deserve to be supported by you because they are antithetical to your views and apparently to your Second Amendment rights. Okay. Next mini segment here. This is the expenditure of your tax dollars. I guess we already went over $500 million of your money and mine to Planned Parenthood. I mean, say what? Let me give you some more good stuff. I gave you a list, I believe, last week, too. You can call it up and listen to the show. The last week's show was, I got quite a few comments on it, so please do listen to it. The National Endowment for the Humanities, which is called the NEH, provided $74,851 of our money to a university to utilize 3D technology to create electronic versions of puppets so viewers can, quote, manipulate and play, unquote, with them. But, you know, Jimmy Kimmel might have bought some of them. And the funding is to scan up to 15 of these puppets, 15, folks, into a system that will let, you know, all these people like Jimmy Kimmel control puppet functions and facial expressions. The National Science Foundation, the NSF, issued a $40,000 grant of our money to a project that is going to catalog, listen to this, the public services provided by the government of Iceland to Syrian refugees who are fleeing to Iceland. Wow. The National Archives issued a $100,000 grant of our money to digitize 250 hours of New York theater video taken in the 70s. Here's a little footnote to that. One of the outfits who said we'll do it was Costco, who said they would do it for $26,000. So somebody somewhere, I couldn't get the name, got $74,000 of our money for a project, which you may or may not believe is worthwhile. But that $74,000 is more of our money than Costco would have done it for. So whatever bureaucrat awarded that just, I guess, doesn't like Costco or their cousin owns the company that got the grant. Who knows? The Department of Defense, the DOD, remember they lost, I think it was $8 billion the last year of Obama's deal. They just don't know where it went. I know where it went. It went into Obama's slush fund and went to ISIS and George Soros and all that kind of stuff. That's where it went. But they are now unable to track $1 billion of equipment, $1 billion with a B, of equipment, including small arms, mortars, and Humvees, you know, kind of important stuff. And this happened, by the way, the actual, these products of war were manufactured in Obama's last years and, gee, big surprise, went to Iraq, supposedly purchased by Iraq in Obama's last years. But they are unable to track this equipment that was purchased for Iraq security forces in 2016, Obama's last year. Now, don't be upset, because the DOD does have a record of the equipment being transported to the region, but they just don't know what happened to it when it got there. Huh. I wonder if it's not being driven by ISIS folks in Syria. Do you remember that story I brought you? Just as a quick sidelight, I brought you that story, and I've talked about it several times over the last year. When Barry, on purpose, we're going to be talking about this shortly, when Barry pulled all our troops out of Iraq, and Iraq collapsed, and ISIS formed, and Barry, despite the best advice of his generals and his intelligence community, did nothing to take out ISIS when he could have, when they were massed out in the open on the Iraqi-Syria border before going into Iraq. Do you remember when they overran the town, I believe it was Fallujah? And if not Fallujah, one of the three big towns in northern Iraq they overran. And there was a huge Iraqi military base there. And the Iraqis didn't fight, they just ran. And they left row upon row upon row of tanks and jeeps and Humvees and all sorts of equipment, all lined up neatly like a parking lot. And Barry, who could have called in an airstrike to wipe out this equipment so the enemy couldn't get it in a heartbeat, let him get it. Maybe this is all a coincidence. You know, I must be one of those conspiracy theorists. Anyway, that's a billion of your money. Bye-bye. The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, I love all these acronyms, launched a program to update its IT system. Do you remember the $5 billion Obamacare website? The Government Accountability Office, GAO, recently reported that USCIS is on pace to finally finish its IT upgrade in 2019. This project was started, you can't make this stuff up, in 2006. So the upgrade of the IT, now look, we all know, even this poor old Hayseed from Wyoming, we all know how fast technology is advancing. I mean, I just had to get a new computer. Well, the old one died because it was so old. And by so old, it was like 5 years old. And the new computer is like one half the size of the old one and does like 10 times as much, including a whole bunch of things that I have not a clue as to what they are or how to get them to work. But our government started an IT upgrade in 2006 that will not be done to 2019. What do you want to bet that when it's done in 2019, they're going to have to start another 13-year upgrade because everything will be so outdated? But listen, don't despair because they've only spent $3.1 billion on it. No problem. The National Endowment of the Arts, the NEA, I talked about them in the last show, right? The board of directors, Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, I mean, it's just unbelievable. The NEA issued a $20,000 grant, at least it wasn't too much, to fund an adult summer camp for, and I quote, artists and scientists investigating the issues surrounding climate change, unquote. I wonder why Valerie and Susan and their ilk were appointed as the board of directors. Everything is politics with the Obama administration, folks, even after they're out of office. And we'll be talking more about that this morning also. By the way, the Department of Defense got audited by the GAO. This was in 2017. Because the DOD gives away, quote unquote, gives away, excess equipment, night vision goggles, simulated rifles, simulated pipe bombs, blah, 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 all sorts of stuff to other federal agencies. State, local governments, you know, whole bunch of outfits. Anyway, the GAO discovered that the DOD, you know, that same DOD that lost $8 billion a couple years ago and can't find $1 billion worth of equipment that went to Iraq, the DOD gave away $1.2 million of equipment to people who claimed to represent fictitious federal agencies. And they don't know what happened to the equipment. Let me explain this to you. So Joe or Hamoud Aboud contacted the DOD when they're giving away this stuff. and says, I represent the federal agency of old people with fungus on their feet. And I need simulated pipe bombs. And he got it. Just boil it down for you. The National Science Foundation, NSF, gave away $203,424 of our money for a grant. You'll love this. And I can't wait to see the study because I have always wondered about this. In fact, I can barely sleep until I get the study in my hands. To study the grammar and tone of the Senku, that's S-E-E-N-K-U, Senku, language of the Burkina Faso, a country in West Africa. You know, I'm fairly well versed on world events, particularly being a hayseed in the middle of Wyoming. But, you know, Burkina Faso, I would have had to struggle to come up with that one. By the way, later, this was in late 2017, just a few months ago, the NSF gave another grant, $150,382, to study the Domaki language, D-O-M-A-A-K-I, language of northern Pakistan. I guess, since we have troops in Afghanistan and the Taliban run to Pakistan, and maybe there's something in that one. I don't know. You can be the judge. Our next item for this morning. See, we are moving right along. Banking. Banking, you know, all those places you put your money where it's no longer. Listen to my shows, Canaries in the Economic Mine, and the show thereafter. Put in the search bar. Put in bank deposits in the search bar. When you put your money in the bank, folks, and it is the law, it ain't your money no more. It is the bank's money. And that is the law. And in the event that bank ever goes belly up, the government will take it over and they can determine to seize your account. No notice, just boom, gone. Instead, you will have stock, capital stock, you lucky, lucky depositor, you, in the newly reformed bank. Your deposit helping to capitalize the bank, saving the government, that's your government, money, which you thought was available to insure your deposits to begin with. Now, the safest of all the banks, with a very few exceptions, are your local, community, and smaller regional banks. These are the banks where you know Joe and Sally and Bob and Tom, and you can talk to them. They understand you. They can help you when things aren't going great. They can really help you when things are going great. They know your business. They know your community. They know how what you do fits in for you, for your family, and for your town. And they really are customer-oriented, most of them. And they're there to help you. Well, all these smaller banks have been beat to death by this monstrosity bill by the name of Dodd-Frank. I've talked about it numerous times. This was the bill that was rammed through Congress, by Obama. It was actually rammed through Congress by Chris Dodd, a slimy senator crook from Connecticut, and Barney Frank, the obnoxious, there's a number of descriptions I could use after that. Why don't we say the obnoxious senator from Massachusetts who lives with his boyfriend in his basement. I think that kind of sums stuff up. And those two people, along with Maxine Waters and a few others, were the ones that were originally responsible for the housing bust to begin with. And I've gone over that. Put in Community Reinvestment Act in the search bar. Put in savings and loans in the, housing crisis in the search bar. Or FDIC in the search bar. The bottom line is that these... these people designed a bill. These people, of all people, who caused the wreck by insisting that 5.5 million Americans who couldn't afford it buy houses, which created subprime mortgages, which created mortgage-backed obligations, which created a mess in 2008, 2009. These people put together and rammed through the Dodd-Frank bill, cheered on, I might add, by all the big banks, particularly the 19 really bad big banks that I've talked about, the Citicorps and the Wells Fargo, who is probably the most fraudulent of all of them, and that's saying something, the J.P. Morgan Chases, that whole cabal of banks. And the reason the big banks liked it is because they're really big banks, and they can hire another, 1,000 people or 10,000 people, whatever, to comply with the massive paperwork and the massive compliance overhead overload that these ridiculous regulations of Dodd-Frank required. And let me tell you, folks, Dodd-Frank is window dressing. If you think Dodd-Frank did anything to safeguard this system, you are just flat wrong. You are crazy. If you you're as crazy as anybody who thinks that Barack Obama loves the American middle class in Wyoming. You're just in left field. No, the big banks were all behind this. Remember my definition of fascism? Or should we say Mussolini's definition of fascism? The marriage of corporate and state? The big banks were all about the state, the government, clamping down these regulations because they could afford to comply. But they knew really good and well that the little banks, the little regional banks and the community banks and the local banks, which are the heart, they are the blood, they are the soul, they are the spine of American small business, that they could not afford to add compliance officers and paperwork and office space and office equipment and time to their much smaller operations, which serves Ma Pa and Main Street. Which, despite what the folks on the coast think, is still the backbone and spine of America. And despite what Honda and the other folks boycotting Ingram think, I might add. Dodd-Frank is finally being dismantled under Trump, part of his deregulation, very successful thus far, deregulation efforts. And there's still going to be regs out there. They may even be a little bit more effective in protecting the system than Dodd-Frank was, or was, shall we say, was played up to be. But the biggest thing is that they're going to lower the cost of doing business for little banks. By the way, the situation got so acrimonious between the big banks, who would love to see little banks fail so they can scoop them up and get even bigger, and the little banks, which want to serve their communities, and for the most part, the huge bulk of them do a terrific job, it got so acrimonious that they actually split into two associations. There used to be one banking association that kind of represented all banks in the country that were members, and now there's two. That's how acrimonious it got. That is the rift, once again, Obama created with Dodd-Frank. I mean, he was divisive and still is on every level of American society, folks. Not just race, not just origin, not just immigration, but even down to one bank against another. It's really remarkable. Now, some of these new regulations, let me just tell you about it. By the way, I mentioned that Wells Fargo, if you type Wells Fargo in the search bar, you can listen to the other shows on the frauds and criminal activities of Wells Fargo Bank. I mean, I got to tell you, if you have money in Wells Fargo Bank, you need to have your head examined. That's all I can tell you. I'm not your financial advisor. I'm just a hayseed in Wyoming. But let me tell you, I'd have it stuck in the drywall before I put it in Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, as all these regulations are changing, Wells Fargo, using the regulations in place, now listen to me, using the regulations under Dodd-Frank, which are, shall we say, superficially comforting, but nothing more than a wet blanket on a smoldering inferno of corruption and instability. So, the U.S. Federal Reserve, let me step back a minute. The U.S. Federal Reserve, supposedly our private central bank, is effectively controlled by the 19 big banks, folks. Don't let anybody kid you. That is the facts, Jack. Their primary job, and don't be fooled, the primary job of the central bank, the Federal Reserve, is to bail out its shareholder constituent banks, particularly the 19 big ones, anytime they have liquidity issues or fail, like some of them did or almost did in 2008. I'll remind you that in 2010, the same year as Dodd-Frank, came these regulations that when you deposit money into a bank, it's no longer your money. Do you kind of see how all these threads tie together? Not that the press would ever report this to you. They're too busy talking about Stormy Daniels. Anyway, there were so many rules in Dodd-Frank with so many loopholes and so many contradictions that these big banks, who of course their lobbyists helped write the bill, knew where all the holes were. In 2016, it was discovered that Wells Fargo employees, overseen by their managers, it wasn't just a few errant employees, this was from the top down, regional managers, and maybe even people who directed regional managers, had opened $3.5 million. Let me repeat that. $3.5 million. $3,500,000 fraudulent accounts. They simply found your name in one of their systems and opened an account for you you never even knew. But it just so happens that the bank made extra money and these employees and managers made bonuses. Wow. And of course, they met their sales goals, which gave them raises. The Justice Department, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the FBI, there's the FBI again, and the state attorney generals, are again investigating. And by the way, Wells Fargo got like slapped with all sorts of billions of dollars of fines and all that. But listen, when you're corrupt, you're corrupt. A couple billion dollars in fines to an outfit the size of Wells Fargo is like, you know, prick me with a pin and then go away, please. Wells Fargo Wealth Management, this is the new one. Wells Fargo Wealth Management includes advisory, brokerage, financial, all sorts of other services. And they are kind of a subsidiary of an outfit called Wells Fargo Advisors. To give you an idea of the size of Wells Fargo, in this one tangent of their operations, Wells Fargo Advisors, they have 16,500 advisors in Wells Fargo Advisors. And 3 million households, may I underline, 3 million unsuspecting and really like turn on brain cells and flick the switch households, use these 16,500 advisors. This one arm of Wells Fargo produces about 10% of its annual profit, which in the fourth quarter, just the fourth quarter of 2016, was $659 million, close to a billion. Well, it seems that what they did with accounts, they also did with fees. Fees adjustments, new fees, increase in fees, compounding of fees, you name it, whatever would create more fees to their 3 million clients in Wells Fargo Advisors. Just in February, we learned now that Wells Fargo was sanctioned by the Federal Reserve. Oh, sanctioned by the Federal Reserve. And as its punishment, it was told by the Federal Reserve, can't make this up, that it was not allowed to grow its assets beyond the $1.95 trillion of assets it had at the end of 2017. Wow. Oh, terrific. I mean, that's kind of like, what's a good analogy? Oh, I know. Kind of like McCabe trying to retire and get his pension. Same type of thing. Anyway, J.P. Morgan Chase has been caught. They were fined $307 million for other types of corrupt behavior. The solutions are being enacted to all this corruption to a bill which did nothing but pummel little banks, the ones that you really want to be in and with and trust. These new rules are trying to plug the holes, shall we say, in this ability to undertake corrupt practices without people's knowledge. Just a few of which, trust me, there's a long list by every single one, or just about, not every, but just about every single one of these 19 big banks. And to strengthen little banks and to reduce the costs on little banks of regulatory activities. One of the things that they're doing is that in the law, they are going to allow for criminal prosecutions, which the Dodd-Frank deal did not. Well, gee, what a surprise. Criminal prosecutions of people, not just the outfit, of people in control at any bank, but particularly the big banks, that oversee, instigate, or in any way aid and abet the fraudulent activities, some of which I just discussed. That's good. Little penalties out there might decrease the fraud. Maybe. We'll see. Got the same thing going with the FBI, DOJ, and State Department right now, don't we? We'll see what happens there, too. One of the things which is being talked about is taking the big banks and kind of making them like utilities in a way. You know, there's pretty strict controls on utilities because obviously outfits that provide you power and stuff can't be running amok. Now, I'm not advocating controls. I am somewhere between an arch conservative and a libertarian when it comes to some of these things. But it looks like there's going to be new capital reserves on banks, 25%. That's pretty stiff. Capital reserves on banks with assets of more than $50 billion, 20% on banks of $10 to $50 billion, and 15% on banks with less than $10 billion in assets. That's a pretty big change, and one that is going to create stress for some banks that are not managed well. But I think overall, just my opinion, I'm not an expert, is going to make the system a little bit more sound and make, we hope, a little less likely some nasty day when you find out your deposits have been converted to capital stock because the capital reserves for that bank weren't high enough to begin with. The other thing, because these new rules, these new laws, this dismantling at least in part of Dodd-Frank, because that's going to decrease the cost at smaller banks, hopefully we will all see it in some type of decrease of closing fees and origination fees and service fees and all that kind of stuff. I don't think it's going to affect your interest rates. I don't think it's going to affect kind of the set stuff that banks charge for, like cashier's checks and this, that, and the other. But I hope that it will decrease Ma and Pa and Main Street's costs related to some of the services that your great small local small banker provides. I'm going to keep you abreast on this. This is developing legislation that really does affect you. I mean, it affects every penny you have in any bank, anywhere, or under your mattress if you ever put it in a bank. Oh, yes, my producer is gesturing at me. So the bills that are currently in the House of Representatives, and they have passed the Systemic Risk Designation Improvement Act, which is H.R. 3312, for those of you that want to track it. It was actually a bipartisan vote. Gee, no wonder the press didn't cover it. 288 to 130. It was passed on December 19, 2017. And there's another bill, too. Once they get reconciled with the Senate, good luck with that, they'll be sent to the President. And it'll be the beginning of the end, or at least the beginning of the substantial revamping of the Dodd-Frank Act. All right. So that kind of wraps up my thoughts on that. It's another situation I'll be keeping my eyes on for you because it affects you. And thank you for reminding me, Ms. Producer. Now, let's talk a little bit about things which are all wrapped into the Constitution and what's going on with our country right now with the avowed intent of the alt-left to dismantle faith, family, the Constitution, and take down forever American values and rights, such as your Second Amendment right and your First Amendment right. The only people who will have the First Amendment right if the progressives have their way are the progressives. You will have one line of thought. Let me give you a quote from Thomas Jefferson. Remember one of the young men who I talked about there on the story? The greatest danger, this is his quote, the greatest danger to American freedom is a government that ignores the Constitution. Unquote. How true that is, folks. The government which is there to protect the Constitution and to make sure that our rights under the Constitution are not trampled on and are defended against all enemies, foreign and domestic. If they begin to subvert the Constitution, we're in a world of hurt. Just look at the current mess at the FBI, at the DOJ, at the State Department. Bob Mueller, who I'm going to talk a little bit about tonight, by the way, not in the context of the investigation, but in the context of what has become apparent now is his unconstitutional existence as a special prosecutor. Oh, yeah, unconstitutional. Our buddy Rod Rosenstein, who's as crooked as all the rest of the Comey, McCabe, Baker, Straczynski, Strzok, Page, Rice, Powers, Rhodes, Obama, Valerie Jarrett, cabal. They, he is right up there, folks. If you listen to last week's show, and I believe the show 3 or 4 weeks ago, just type Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, into the search bar, and those shows will come up. Mr. Mueller has a sordid past. Now, I'm not talking about his military service and the stuff he did when he was younger. More power to him. You know, kind of like John McCain. I mean, he was a veteran. He was, in many respects, a war hero. He was certainly a prisoner of war who suffered terribly and exhibited great courage while in the hands of the North Vietnamese. But the great things that you did in the past don't let you off the hook for the really nasty things you have done in the near past. I mean, look, the greatest guy or gal in the world who has given, you know, helped a million children get food and vaccinations or whatever, who has devoted a large portion of their life to all these wonderful causes, if they commit cold-blooded murder a week ago, they're still a murderer. I mean, maybe the court will take into account all their community and civic service up to that point, but the crime has still been committed. And that's what we have in Mueller. Because somewhere along the line, Mueller's train went off the non-corrupt tracks. And somewhere along the line, perhaps earlier than Mueller, Rod Rosenstein's train went off the non-corrupt tracks. What we have now is a government which is, in Thomas Jefferson's words, the greatest danger to American freedom is a government that ignores the Constitution. This kind of all ties into what I'm going to talk about also in these final segments, the humanitarian hoax of the alt-left, because this is all designed to pull the wool over your eyes. Deny everything, admit nothing, divert, distract. Saul Alinsky's tactics. So Mueller, baby, and Rosenstein, baby, have an illegal investigation going, at least to the extent that it is not specifically now, that is a key word, specifically related to the probability of criminal wrongdoing as it relates to conspiracy with the Russians to affect the election in the United States in 2016. That's pretty specific. Jeff Sessions recused himself on that specific topic. I'll give you the exact words here in a moment. That is the only thing the Attorney General has recused himself on. Any other authority is not, under the Constitution and under law, granted to Rod Rosenstein to do anything else with Mueller's investigation. In fact, I'll go one step further. Under the Constitution, well, under the law, derived from the Constitution, the only person at DOJ that can bring criminal matters, prosecute criminal matters related to tax stuff, is the Deputy Attorney General for tax, which Rod Rosenstein is not. Paul Manafort, never mind what you think of him, never mind whether he was a crook or he wasn't a crook, whether he was a patriot or he wasn't a patriot, whether he conspired with Ukraine or he didn't, never put all that to the side. We're talking about the Constitution and the law. The same Constitution and law, by the way, invoked by the alt-left when it comes to, they say, protecting illegal aliens. That same Constitution. A number of his indictments by Mueller are for tax matters. In some cases long ago, like 2010. Mueller was granted the authority, we find out just in the last week or two, by Rosenstein to investigate these tax matters, which Jeff Sessions is not recused from, and Rosenstein does not have the statutory or constitutional authority to grant leave to investigate to Mueller. And that authority was granted, listen to this, a week after the raid on Manafort's home, where his wife was handcuffed and thrown to the ground by a fully armed SWAT team who took all his stuff. In other words, a CYA letter a week later, like, whoops, you just did something that wasn't authorized, so even though I don't have the right to authorize it, I'm going to write a letter authorizing. It's kind of like Susan Rice writing herself a letter the day of Trump's inauguration about the meeting, that was the 20th of January, about a meeting that occurred in the Oval Office with Obama and his cabal and James Comey and Stroke and who knows who else, McCabe, on the Russian investigation where she was writing to herself on her email. And then the president said, we're going to do this by the book and exactly according to, I mean, really? Come on. I mean, how dumb do they think we are? I'm not sure which is more insulting, how stupid they think we are or the fact that they attempt to do it to begin with. I'm not sure. I'll have to think about it. In any event, so here we have Paul Manafort getting prosecuted by a prosecutor who, in effect, was never appointed to do those specific prosecutions, who was granted authority by a deputy attorney general who was never appointed nor given the authority, and who does not have the authority under the Constitution to give the authority to Mueller. And it was all done a week after Mueller exercised the authority he didn't have. You can't get more unconstitutional than that, folks. You simply can't. Now, where Jeff Sessions is, I mean, I don't know. There's an email. I guess somebody didn't like what I just said. Anyway, the judge that's in charge of Manafort's case, his name is T.S. Ellis, not T.S. Eliot, but T.S. Ellis III, federal judge. And Manafort has filed, this is how this all came out, Manafort's attorneys have filed a brief to dismiss at least these types of charges against Manafort because the charges have been brought by an unconstitutional prosecutor without authority who was appointed by an unconstitutionally by a deputy attorney general without the authority, and then whose mission was unconstitutionally and illegally expanded after the fact. I think they got a pretty good case for dismissal myself. We'll see what happens. By the way, the exact words, which I promised you a little bit ago, of Jeff Sessions' recusal was, I recuse myself from, quote, any existing or future investigations of any matters related in any way to the campaigns for President of the United States. Okay. Well, that doesn't seem to have to do with overseas tax accounts in Ukraine in 2010. Now, you know, again, I'm just a poor old Hasty in Wyoming, but I don't see the correlation in there. By the way, these powers are all derived or not derived under the Appointment Clause of the Constitution. You know, that document that those eight young men that I talked about at the beginning of the show, that document that they signed at peril of hanging at the hand of King George at the ages of 18 to 24, that Constitution. So the Appointment Clause, it basically ensures that democratic process controls any and all appointments of, and I quote now, all but interior, unquote, officers. Basically what that comes down to is that the president is virtually the only person in the Constitution that can appoint folks to high levels with, of course, the consent and advice of the Senate. So Trump had the authority to appoint Jeff Sessions to the Office of Attorney General. That gave Jeff Sessions the authority to appoint Rod Rosenstein for the specific purpose of investigating any matters that Sessions had recused himself of. I've just read you the nuts and bolts of his recusal. You know, one of the greatest powers that the Department of Justice has, let me tie this in for you, is to convene a grand jury. Grand juries are really powerful weapons. Once a grand jury is formed, a grand jury can subpoena anyone's testimony and records and access their tax records. Seek warrants to spy on their activity, search and seize property, or they can threaten any of those actions. And the appointment of a grand jury by Mueller, a prosecutor not appointed constitutionally, whose authority has been unconstitutionally and illegally expanded. I mean, this is like the rabbit hole, right? Like the wormhole. I mean, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, can you hear it? Well, or as some of the commentators on TV, this was a really popular term like 3 or 4 months ago, the fruit of the poisonous tree. Well, in this case, the poisonous tree is not a FISA warrant, which is what they were alluding to at that time. The tree is the fact that the entire process from beginning to end is illegal. And how can a legal process bring charges for a purported illegality against someone? I mean, it boggles your mind. But it also concerns you, because that is your government ignoring the Constitution. There are a number of other reasons that Mueller's investigation, or at least the huge bulk of it, and any expansion of his investigation, and there have been a number by illegally and unconstitutionally by Rosenstein, is basically just doesn't exist under law. I mean, it gets you back to that same conundrum. There is a gentleman by the name of Robert Barnes. He is a really well-known constitutional lawyer. In the briefs that Manafort's attorneys filed to get everything thrown out for all the reasons I just told you, the responses of Rosenstein and the government, Mueller and the government, actually, to try and defeat Manafort's motion to dismiss, included this memo, which nobody has ever seen before. Remember all the documents that Congress has been trying to get since August under subpoena that the DOJ and the FBI aren't giving them? Here's one of them. And they'll give you a reason why they don't want to produce the rest. So here's this memo, which Rosenstein basically writes like Rice did in her office as Trump is getting inaugurated to CYA her and Obama's butt. Here's this memo a week after Manafort's home is raided and his tax records are taken. Here's this memo from Rosenstein to Mueller saying, okay, I'm authorizing all of this stuff. And by the way, you are not allowed to report to anyone but me. Excuse me, Rod. I don't remember Trump appointing you as the Attorney General. I'm pretty sure that the way this works is you're the Deputy Attorney General, and the Attorney General has the power and should be exercising the power to require Mueller's reports to him on anything and everything other than that one specific thing that the Attorney General has recused himself from. I mean, this whole thing kind of boggles the imagination, boggles the mind. So anyway, this memo now surfaces as part of the government's attempt to defeat Manafort's motion, and it's opened up a whole new can of worms. And once again, like, is anybody reporting on this? Virtually no one. I believe Hannity has had some good stuff on it. But anyway, this lawyer, Robert Barnes, and by the way, if you do listen to either Dershowitz, also a well-known and left-leaning constitutional scholar, and there's one other gentleman who's terrific too, they all agree. They've brought up the same points over the last week. Anyway, let me read you a couple of his tweets. Legal analysis on problems with Rosenstein purported authorization of Mueller to investigate matters outside the time frame and subject matter of the 2016 campaign. Rosenstein has usurped Sessions' power and has given secret authorization to Mueller to witch hunt Manafort. Here's another tweet by Barnes. Rosenstein was acting attorney general only on matters Sessions had recused himself. Sessions only recused himself from DOJ investigations of the 2016 campaign. Yet Rosenstein claimed to authorize Mueller, this is that secret memo that's now surfaced, claimed to authorize Mueller to investigate matters dating back to 2006 and ending before 2016. Let me read you a couple more of his, because his tweets are, unlike some tweets out there, informational. Rosenstein does not have the authorization over tax crimes. I talked a little bit about this. Only the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Tax Division can authorize indictments of tax crimes. Rosenstein could not authorize Mueller to look at tax crimes when Rosenstein himself never had that authority. Gee, where'd you hear that? Oh, that's right, me, a couple minutes ago. Rosenstein's letter, this is the same secret memo that's now surfaced, tells Mueller only to look at Rosenstein for clarification of Mueller's authorization. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. I mean, all the crooks are sticking together here. Rosenstein is not the Attorney General of the United States and could not monopolize supervision of Mueller for matters that did not relate to Sessions' recusal. Does that kind of give you a good idea? Also, for those of you who are Fox viewers or who read the Wall Street Journal, the Daily Caller, Greg Jarrett is an excellent attorney. I don't agree with every single thing he says, but I think 98% of the time he's like right on target, and he's not bashful. He had an article out on these same matters. He has still more takes on why this is unconstitutional and illegal, and why Mueller and Rosenstein are conspiring to break the law, which is starting to get into felony territory. Quote, This violates the special counsel law that requires a specific statement of facts to be investigated. In other words, he's saying, listen, not only does Rosenstein not have the authority, and therefore Mueller doesn't have the authority, but in addition, the concoction of the quote-unquote Russia-Trump collusion matter, and putting aside Hillary Clinton, the FISA warrant, GPL, all that other stuff, putting that aside, is illegal the date it was conceived, because a specific crime was not alleged. Collusion, folks, is not a crime. Let me give you another quote from Jarrett. Unethical Mueller in his court filing, this is that same court filing I've been talking to you about, which kind of really raised the red flags up the flagpole here. Unethical Mueller in his court filing admits that Rosenstein's order appointed to him was intentionally vague. This also violates the special counsel law that requires a specific statement of facts to be investigated. Rosenstein and Mueller colluded to break the law and should resign. Well, actually, I think resignation's not enough, but that's my opinion. Let me see if I got another quote here for you. The special counsel statute specifically prohibits Mueller from serving if he has, quote, a personal relationship with any person substantially involved in the investigation or prosecution. The language is mandatory. He shall disqualify himself. James Comey is his longtime friend. Mueller is Comey's mentor. Comey is substantially involved in the case indeed. He is the central witness. So, as you can see, folks, there are now some problems starting to surface relative to this special counsel that, how do we say this gently? Why don't we just say that makes the entire process smell and appear even more rotten than we knew it was. And we will stay abreast of it for you. And this kind of ties right in. This hoiky-poiky, winky-wink, hanky-panky, government ignoring and, in fact, trampling on the Constitution, Jefferson's greatest fear. That young man of 23, excuse me, back in 1776, expressing his greatest fear. We have President Obama. More and more evidence is coming to light. And listen, I have said this for years. When you fail to act, that is a decision. When you act, that is a decision. Right, wrong, or indifferent. People make decisions, fail to act or act, for a reason, for a purpose. If we go down the list of everything that Obama did that failed, well, actually, we'd be here like all morning. I don't have enough time on this show. In fact, I'm running up against the clock as it is. Let's go just down a few things that we as a people, America as a nation, in some cases our kids, and certainly Trump, his administration, and conservatives, and Americans of all types, even though they don't know it, are dealing with today that are remnants of Obama's acts and lack of acts, i.e. Obama's decisions. And then I'm going to draw a common thread for you, because this is all about an attack on the Constitution, just like the Mueller investigation or the FBI corruption or the DOJ corruption. I mean, right down the line, this is all the government attacking the Constitution, Jefferson's greatest fear. And by the way, it should be yours too. Iran, North Korea, jobs going overseas, particularly to China, technology going to China and elsewhere, immigration, DACA, Fast and Furious, Syria, ISIS, Guantanamo, Obamacare, Libya, $10 trillion more in national debt, the National Labor Relations Board, racial and Islamic policies, not only in the White House, but purposefully by decision, by act, kind of filtered out to all the agencies. Islam itself. The politicization, of the FBI, the DOJ, the EPA, and the State Department, just to name a few. I mean, we're seeing the fruits of that now, aren't we? Iraq, pulling the troops out of Iraq, which I talked about earlier. What do all these things have in common, folks? Here's what they have in common. They failed. The Iran deal is a failure. The North Korea, his doing nothing with North Korea is obviously a huge failure. The amount of jobs that went over to China that are just now coming back is a failure. A immigration system, border, and ICE in chaos, and DACA, which was illegal when he did it, is a failure. Fast and Furious, where Eric Holder let 2,000 semi-automatic assault rifles, as the left would call them, out in the hands of Mexican cartels and didn't track them, and Americans were killed. I didn't mention this one, but it appears that in 2017, Obama had his Department of Justice, you're going to love this, this is the anti-gun alt-left, had his Department of Justice change the description of fugitive from anyone who attempts to leave the, shall we say, the scene or the area of the court, or the area of the incarceration, in other words, a very limited local area, as a fugitive. Basically, the old definition, well, you know, if you left the courthouse and went across the street to buy a pack of gum, you could be considered a fugitive. He had the Department of Justice change the fugitive definition to across state lines. So if you're in L.A., and you run from your crimes, from your court, from your whatever, no matter what your crime is, murder, rape, you name it, you can go all the way to, like, you know, north of San Francisco, and you're not a fugitive yet. And the other thing that that did, listen to this, hold on to your hat, remember, this is the alt-left who are so concerned about the safety of the children. If you're not on the fugitives list, you're not on the NICS list. If you're not on the NICS list, you can go in and buy a gun while you're north of San Francisco, getting away from your crime in Los Angeles. And you can buy a gun because you're not in that background check system. You won't come up. And there are now memos that have surfaced. I'm going to stay on this for just a moment. There are now memos that have surfaced that he knew exactly what that would do. And that is to put 500,000 people who, up to the point of his change of definition, were fugitives, to take them out of that class and to allow 500,000 criminals in the United States to legally pass a background check and buy weapons, which, of course, he counted on. A portion of them using those weapons in a crime, and those crimes further incensing a public to enact gun control. In other words, This was a policy he implemented that was designed to fail. And every single policy that I mentioned, and there are many more, every single policy was designed to fail, folks, not to succeed. He never thought Iran was not going to get a nuclear weapon with the Iran deal. Quite the contrary. The Iran deal was designed to fail, i.e., Iran would eventually obtain a nuclear weapon and, to add insult to injury, financed by $150 billion of our money that he gave them. DACA was never meant to protect the Dreamers. DACA was intended to make a mess of the immigration system. Libya was never meant to install democracy, or to the killing of Gaddafi in Libya was never meant to put in democracy. It was meant to fail, to give more room to the radical Islamists who Barack Obama considers freedom fighters, to expand and base. The appointment of political pigs to the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, you name it, was not designed to better those departments. It was designed to make them fail and to make our faith in those departments fail. And by the way, he's well succeeded. The drawdown of troops in Iraq was not designed to save American lives or American troops or to give Iraq more autonomy. It was designed to fail. Jobs being exported to China and the lack of control of China's banditry, for lack of better terms, of its trade relationships with the United States was designed to hurt our economy and to cost America jobs. I mean, this is harsh stuff for me to say, but this is true. And the more we learn, the more I'm convinced. Listen, I was convinced to begin with. Now it's like convinced with icing on top. And the plan of the alt-left, folks, and Obama is the king of the alt-left, is that if you can intentionally create failures in trusted systems or policies or events, then the people, A, obviously if you lose your job to China, or B, if you're scared for your life because of criminals with guns, the people will turn to the government for help, and they will clamor for a fix. There was a reason in Obamacare, it's just one example, that the poorest of Americans, the poorest, I mean, we're talking about the bottom 1%. They're the ones which suffered the most with the mandate. Let's face it, if you're making $20,000 a year, I'm taking a number, and you're slapped with a fight, and obviously you can't afford $4,000 or $5,000 a year in health insurance. I mean, that's just right math. But if you're slapped with a fine of $1,000 because you didn't buy the mandated health insurance, that $1,000 to you who are making $20,000 per year is much more significant than $1,000 is to somebody who's making $60,000 or $80,000 or $100,000, right? This is common sense. And of course, the more it was designed to fail, the more the poorest of us were hurt by Obamacare, the more Obamacare did not work, the more premiums went through the roof, as they have for lots of people. I've given you lots of stories, and you probably know some yourself. Unfortunately, some of you may be on Obamacare yourselves. I hope you're not, so you've experienced it firsthand. This was by design, and that was to get people so upset with the healthcare system and so upset with Obamacare that the only reasonable conclusion the people would reach is single payer. Just like Fast and Furious and the 500,000 fugitives that can now buy guns, because of Obama's change, is going to lead to more crime and more injuries and fatalities by guns. Criminals kill people with guns. Guns don't kill people with guns. Somebody has to pull the trigger. And let's face it, 500,000 fugitives are far more likely to pull the trigger of a gun in the commission of a crime than you, me, or Sally down the street. And Obama knows this. Obama was brilliant, unfortunately, in the darkest and most evil and anti-American ways. Keeping all this in mind, keeping all those, and it's a fraction of the list, all those really huge, monumental events, policies, international transactions, if you will, huge domestic programs like Obamacare, keeping all those in mind, applying the intended to fail theory from Obama, and then linking Obama, Holder, and the current Attorney General of California leads us to some startling conclusions, shall we say. Startling conclusions. So, the current Attorney General of the United States, let me grab my stuff here. The current Attorney General of the United States, while we may be upset with him, but who knows, is an American. I.e., he believes in America. The Attorney General of California, however, is different. Quite different. And he is part of, and buys into, and consorted with, and planned with Eric Holder and Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch to do exactly what he's doing now. And like those other folks, at the head of the pedestal of the progressive movement, he has similar backgrounds. Remember we talked about at the beginning of the show, backgrounds, right? You know, your small business. New employee, please bring me your resume, please bring me your references, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. All these people had the same background. All of them were tied at the hip by both background and by action. Let me tell you about Xavier Becerra, the Attorney General of California that you've seen on TV spouting and fuming, but trying to appear so humanitarian and so proper and so concerned about the people and so concerned about the poor immigrants on and on and on. I mean, it makes you want to gag. But none of that, and none of his acts and lack of acts, like Obama's, are designed to succeed, folks. They're designed to fail. He knows, just as Jerry Brown, another alt-left progressive, knows, that the immigration policies they have implemented in California are going to fail. They're failing right now. No reasonable person with a living brain cell, and these people are smart. These are not stupid people. No living person with a living brain cell could for one second look at California and think that immigration is a success, that their policies on immigration. And that's being borne out more and more. You have Orange County now, and you have San Diego County about to go, and you have Encinito, and you have that Los Alamitos, that small town. I mean, you know, the revolt is starting. But you got to understand, the intent is not to get, is not to safeguard illegal aliens. It's not to safeguard immigrants. It's not to create a diverse society. It's not even really about social justice. It's really about, well, obviously it's about votes in the end, but it's really about getting people so sick of an immigration system and so sick of the problems with illegal aliens that they just go, okay, open the border and legalize everybody. Just like Obamacare was designed to get everybody so sick of healthcare, they said, okay, the government better take it over. It's accomplishing your mission not by action, but by action designed to fail. Let me tell you about Xavier, baby. He was born in California. He graduated from Stanford Law School. Gee, another product of the progressive education system. In 1984, during his time at Stanford, Becerra, baby, became a member of MECHA. That's Mecca. MECHA. By the way, it's spelled capital M, capital E, capital C, small h, capital A. Mecca, because you probably never heard of it, is kind of a student branch of La Raza, which I have talked about. The La Raza movement is alt-left, very anti-American, believes strongly that the Treaty of Guadalupe, for you history buffs, the Treaty of Guadalupe in 1848, which basically ceded after the Mexican-American War, which basically ceded Texas, Texas was its own republic and came into the country, but New Mexico, Nevada, California, and Arizona from Mexico to the United States, the Great Southwest Expansion, that whole treaty was illegal, that it was really white, they believe this now, that it was white oppression of brown-skinned peoples, and therefore racist, and that the proper reparations, do you remember when I began all of this 4 or 5 weeks ago? And I'm going to be talking more about it, but I talked about what's going on, which nobody is covering. I mean, nobody is covering what's going on in Rhodesia and South Africa, with now an all-black government claiming reparations and taking, without due process, without compensation whatsoever, generations-old farms owned by non-black people, white, Hispanic. Well, it doesn't matter. If you're not black, you don't get to own property anymore. The government just takes it. Reparations. Very scary. In fact, if you want to listen to that show, if you haven't listened to it, I spent a considerable amount of time on it and gave a lot of background, and it will make your hair curl. And I tied it into the feelings of certain black alt-left folks in this country, including people in Congress like Maxine Waters. She's going to come up here related to our friend Becerra, too. They're all tied together, folks. It's all one cabal. Because Maxine Waters said, oh, yeah, well, 2020, Democratic president, yeah, I'd look at reparations. Gee, I guess we know what that means. Just look at South Africa and Rhodesia. Okay. I digress there a tiny bit. But Mecca believes, like its kind of parent outfit, La Raza, everything back to Mexico by the adults. This is like everything back to Mexico by the students. They believe that Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and parts of Nevada, Utah, and Colorado, they're a little bit more ambitious when it comes to geography, should all go back to Mexico. I wonder how those blue-voting folks in Denver that have turned that state blue or purple, I wonder how they'll like that, being under the Mexican government rather than the American government. Maybe some of them will love it. Who knows? Becerra was elected to Congress in 1996. One of his endorsements was the Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America, folks, this is fascinating, is a group that had many members and has even more now in the House of Representatives, along with a few silent members in the Senate, I might add. And the most outspoken member of the House cabal of Democratic Socialists of America is a gentleman that you've heard of, Bernie Sanders. Amazing with that. In October 2002, Becerra supported a group called the Chicano Coalition for Peace and Social Justice. There's that social justice again. By the way, the same words that are being used in Rhodesia and South Africa right now. The Chicano Coalition for Peace and Social Justice folks was infiltrated and run at that time by the Communist Party USA. If you remember, the Communist Party USA endorsed Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and a host of other names that you know. In 2005, he joined with Raul Grijalva, and here's a name for you. Oh yeah, another congressman, Luis Gutierrez, in another group called Latinos for Peace. Latinos for Peace. They really do come up with some good names. It's unbelievable. That group was also run by the Communist Party. It was an anti-Iraq war group. Becerra also co-sponsored John Conyers, you know John, right? Remember the Black Caucus, House Bill 676. That bill, by the way, but see how this all ties in, calls for the creation of a government-run, single-payer healthcare system, unquote. Wow. I mean, when you start putting all these threads together, it really is amazing. Amazing. In June 2010, Becerra put on a speech at an event called America's Future Now. That confab, which is an annual one, is put on by an outfit called the Campaign for America's Future and the Institute for Policy Studies. I mean, isn't this an amazing trail? And let me tell you, we haven't gotten started. Let me tell you about Campaign for America's Future, folks. I will quote, because otherwise you won't believe me. Quote, seeks to delegitimize and dismantle conservatism while advancing progressive agendas vis-a-vis taxes, the economy, healthcare, education, social welfare programs, the environment, and energy policy. This group, this is their self-description, okay? I quote, the Strategy Center for the Progressive Movement. They, by the way, are a nonprofit organization. Gotta love it. So they're really kind of operating on our tax dollars. Terrific. One of their missions is to, quote, expose the conservative agenda that has made things worse, unquote, and to enter into and usher in, let me quote, an era of conservative failure, comma, a destabilized Middle East and Asia, the persistent threat of terrorism, a menacing climate crisis, an insecure and dwindling energy supply, unprecedented trade deficits, unchecked global corporate power, a broken healthcare system, a weakened pension system, and an increasingly inaccessible higher education system, unquote. Now, for those of you that were listening 10 or 15 minutes ago when I was talking about Obama's brilliantly evil poison pill policy of devising policies that he knew and wished to fail, to achieve the ultimate end, think about what I just read you. It is exactly what he did. It is exactly what they do. And this is their, not mine, this is not my description, this is their admission and policy statement. And Mr. Becerra is right in the middle of it. Let me give you a quote from Norman Thomas. He was a six-time socialist candidate for president of the United States. He was also involved in the founding and continuation of the Democratic Socialists of America that Bernie is part of and Becerra is part of, etc., etc. I mean, they're all part of the same cabal. Let me quote. Quote, the American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but under the name of liberalism, they will adopt every fragment of the socialist program until one day America will be a socialist nation without knowing how it happened. I no longer need to run as a presidential candidate for the Socialist Party. The Democratic Party has adopted our platform, unquote. This is not me speaking. This is not Sean Hannity speaking or Mark Levin. This is them speaking. That is their words. That is their quote. Let me continue with Mr. Becerra because he's kind of he could be the poster boy for what's going on right now. He was a member of some prominent leftists who urged Obama. Oh, yeah, there's that link. Ooh, another one of them. To award a posthumous Presidential Medal of Freedom to a guy by the name of Fred Ross, who was specifically and personally trained by Saul Alinsky, you know, Handbook for Radicals, Saul Alinsky, and was a mentor to Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. And for those of you who don't know Dolores Huerta, I don't have time in this show to tell you about her. Why don't we just say, she's not your loving grandmother. Look her up. Anyway, I'm trying to skip through and give you there's so much here that I could go on for hours. Xavier, baby, was not only a proud member of all these other groups. I've read you their mission statements. This is their words. But he was also a member of the, quote, Congressional Progressive Caucus, the CPC, which was founded, 1991 by Bernie Sanders. Gee, it's amazing how all these threads keep running together into the tapestry of anti-Americanism. Sanders' co-founders of CPC, by the way, were House members Ron DeLumes, Lane Evans, Thomas Andrews, Peter DeFazio, and, Maxine Waters. I think this was the same Maxine Waters who talked about Yeah, that's right, same Maxine Waters. The CPC was involved in the creation of yet another group, the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. And IPS continues to advise CPC to this very day, folks. Do you know who else helped Bernie Sanders form the CPC? Oh, yes, our old friends, the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA. And they maintain their alliance with the caucus as I speak to you. Their meetings, which are held periodically, quote, to unite our forces on a common agenda, unquote, include Bernie Sanders, labor leader Richard Trumka, Professor Naomi Chomsky, she's a piece of work, feminist Patricia Ireland, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Senator Paul Wellstone, there's a senator who's outed, journalist William Greider, you know him. Yeah. Look him up. Read some of his stuff. And the socialist author Barbara Ehrenreich. I'm not familiar with her. Ehrenreich. In 1997, the CPC worked with yet another group, which at that time had been newly launched, the Progressive Challenge. The Progressive Challenge, let me explain to you, is a coalition of about 100 far-left, alt-left, rabid alt-left, beyond communists, maybe, leftist organizations to unite. The goal of this outfit, Progressive Challenge, was to unite all these groups, workers of the world unite, to unite all these groups in specific activities and objectives under, I quote, a multi-issue progressive agenda, unquote. Do you remember my reading you the mission statement of that other outfit about 5 minutes ago? Campaign for America's Future. You remember that long list of everything? Menacing climate crisis, an insecure and dwindling energy supply. This is what they want to create, folks. They're not complaining that it exists. This is what they want to create. Unprecedented trade deficits, unchecked global corporate power, blah, 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 weakened pension system. All right. This then, years later, with Xavier and the rest of the cabal, Bernie and Obama and who knows who else, involved, This outfit is to unite all these outfits, all these other outfits, into achieving this laundry list of failures, so that the American people could, in the words of that six-time Socialist of America's presidential candidate, turn people to socialism. Make them so disgusted with what was going on that the only place they would feel they could turn was the government to help them. I mean, it's really, to a conservative mind, which is basically live and let live, you do your thing, you do my thing, I won't infringe on you so long as you don't infringe on me, and, you know, off we'll go and have a happy life. This is really, it's almost a numbing thought. It's almost a numbing thought. The Socialist Party of America, by the way, announced in 2009, this will scare you, that they now, at that time, they had at least 70 congressional Democrats, no Republicans, that were members of its caucus. In other words, members of the Democratic Socialists of America. A number of those members also belonged, like Maxine Waters, to the Congressional Black Caucus. This one of the articles that I've been researching has a list of all these people. I'm going to see if we can't post that next week, and I'll draw your attention to it. And by the way, I just can't believe it. I'm out of time. Yeah, I'm out of time. It's unbelievable. So I'm once again, right? One of the most important things that are going on. I was one of the first to even raise the question 3 months ago. I'm glad to see, by the way, that other people are now on it. There's a number of newscasters on it, Tucker Carlson particularly, on what these tech people, on what the tech companies are doing to your freedoms, and what they may well try and do to your elections. You talk about collusion and election meddling. And I'm gonna have to move it up in the segment process next week, because there's some stuff here that nobody else is talking about, despite the fact they're doing a terrific job, that you need to know. Anyway, let me finish with Xavier, baby, because believe it or not, look, what Xavier wants to do is he wants a complete collapse of the California immigration system. He wants people to be so disgusted that and he wants so many illegal aliens and so many Hispanic votes that he can actually begin. I know you're going to shake your head, but I'm telling you. I mean, it's right in their own words, folks, that he can begin to literally turn states back to Mexico. There's a reason California has talked about secession, including, by the way, Mr. Becerra. It's not really secession from America. It's really transition, in their minds, rightfully, social justice, back to Mexico. I know you're shaking your head. I know you can't even contemplate it. But this is what the Attorney General of California is trying to eventually achieve. And with California, you know, I read you their stuff, parts of Colorado, parts of Utah, for goodness sakes, New Mexico, Texas, Nevada, and Arizona. You know, a third of the country. Back to Mexico. yeah. Okay. Here's what I'd like you to do as I wrap up for this morning without covering many of the topics I really needed to, which are equally, and in some cases perhaps even more important than the topics I did cover. I mean, I didn't get to what's going on with this IT scandal and Wasserman Schultz and the Pakistani, which I've talked about in the past, but more stuff has come out. I didn't get to some of Obama's other failure things, which I wanted to bring up. I didn't get to the tech stuff, which I wanted to bring up. Unbelievable. Well, next week I will make a concerted effort to include those with whatever huge things happen between now and then, and I'm sure there will be some. Here's what I want you to do. Number one, Please do listen to or watch that video underneath the audio bar. And send $10 to this soldier's family, or 20, or whatever. I mean, help out a fellow American and a guy who volunteered to protect you and who got shafted by the same Obama administration who was going to let Bergdahl, a friggin' traitor and deserter, off the hook, and who called him, a la Susan Rice, and who called him a soldier who served with distinction and honor on the Sunday talk shows. I mean, let's right a wrong here. Let's get this guy out of jail and back to his family. Number two, you need to stay atop of, and you need to either make one call a week or send an email a week to your senators, congressmen, and whoever else, your mayor, your councilman, your state legislatures, your governor, saying, don't screw with my Second Amendment rights. And you need to find people with like minds. Or you need to make a decision about what you're going to do when they come for your guns. I think writing an email and picking up the phone might be a little easier and certainly safer. Number three, in the politics section of the articles on the website, particularly from here on in, I'm going to start to be posting places you can contribute monies to various campaigns around the country. If you think that your head is spinning now with all the crud that's going on with the Republicans, as limp as they are, in charge of Congress and President Trump, you ain't seen nothing yet. You ain't seen nothing yet if you get a Democratic House of Representatives. I mean, then your head's really going to explode. And the agenda you need, the agenda we want, the agenda that we hired Trump for, is not going to get enacted. And if we lose the Senate, we're going to lose our once-in-a-lifetime, maybe once-in-a-multi-general chance to get the Supreme Court stacked with six, in other words, an unbreakable majority, conservative justices. And remember that some of the conservative justices that are on there now, like Clarence Thomas, are older. They're in their 70s. Okay, I think you can visualize what will happen if we don't get that done. And the Supreme Court, kind of the last bulwark, if the Supreme Court becomes liberal, becomes progressive. Wow, Katie barred the door. You won't have an ear. You won't have the Bill of Rights, never mind the Second Amendment. So that is what you can do, folks. And everybody has to do something. You cannot just sit back and shake your head and be pissed off and think this is all going to happen without you. Everybody needs to get their hand on the oar and help with the row. In the meantime, you keep your eyes open and look behind the scenes of what these people say as to where they've been, what their background is, who they are, and what they really, really, really want to accomplish, including via failure of the policy they're trying to tell you is being implemented for humanitarian purposes for you and your children and America. Right. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a terrific week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.